When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
My guest today is Dr. Norman Fortenberry, the Chief Executive Officer of a 35-year-old organization, Great Minds in STEM. Their vision is to achieve a workforce of science, technology, engineering, math, and medical health professionals that is fully reflective of the rich diversity of the nation. And the mission is to inspire, support, and recognize students and professionals, especially those from underserved communities, to create a talent pool of STEM leaders dedicated to serving the nation. Norman is an MIT-educated, highly regarded executive leader with extensive experience in program and project design, development, implementation, and evaluation in the public, nonprofit, and academic sectors. He is a strategic visionary known for building, maintaining, and enhancing highly effective organizations and often exceed their goals. He's an experienced fundraiser with proven track record in garnering funds from government, corporate, and individual sources in support of academic programs at the pre-college, undergraduate, and graduate levels across engineering, science, and mathematics disciplines. I am delighted to have the opportunity to have this conversation with Norman. As each day passes and so many aspects of all industries and enterprises change, we are talking about the demand for the identification and cultivation of workers as an overarching challenge faced for virtually every need, whether for skilled craft and trades or college-educated engineers. The critical need demands that we attract all. This connects to the continuing requirement to embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is the connection to my message about people. Norman, I'm delighted to have you on my show today.
Dennis, it's a pleasure to be here.
And I know you mean that.
Oh, absolutely.
What else would you be doing on this particular day, at this particular time? For me to kind of nuance a little bit and bring, let's call the non-professional, you might say higher level positions, roles, and career paths with what I talk about a lot, which is the construction industry, where their biggest challenge when we talk about workforce is individuals simply to attract into the industry in order to fill positions that are being vacated by individuals who are retiring. And their challenge is to attract and use more creative ways of doing it, attract entry-level individuals into what they call the skill, craft, and trades. I think in terms of just thinking about your organization, that we're not doing different things. We're organized in a different way. Some of the attraction of individuals and trying to cultivate new individuals into different careers may be done a different way when you're talking about crafts and trade versus professional positions, where the professional positions, you know, seed the process, even at the elementary school level, which I think your organization is even involved at that level in trying to help people understand what STEM is all about and why it's so vital to try to give individuals an opportunity at the very early stages. And then through their preparation, whether it's a traditional academic preparation or through technical education and training that's done by a number of the unions across industries, where they do a good to very good job of providing training in the technical, or what I call from the bench that I operate from, hard skills. And when we talk about technology, when we talk about engineering, those are all hard skill focused practices and opportunities for individuals to enjoy career paths. So I guess my first question is a simple one. Does my talking about these two different groups or pools of individuals, of workforces, in the same conversation, does it make sense? Is it acceptable? Is it productive?
Dennis, the first thing to understand is that they're not two different workforces. There is a continuum. One of my early efforts was I talked about the engineering professions, and I explicitly put an S on the end of it. And this actually follows practice that was done by the American Society of Mechanical Engineers back in the 1970s, probably around the 70s. We have the skilled trades. We have technicians, technologists, and engineers. In any type of technical organization, that continuum exists. Each part of that continuum is essential to the success of the organization. and each part of that continuum contributes to the success of the overall. And each has its own specialized knowledge and skills that we are dependent upon. So there is a continuum, and there are people along that continuum. And I guess my only thing is to make sure that if somebody wants to move along the continuum, that they have the opportunity to do so. But in terms of we're drawing from a broad national pool, frankly, international, people have different interests. They have different levels of preparation. And so we invite them to be part of that continuum as their interest and their preparation allows. So that absolutely makes sense to me.
Good. And I appreciate the way you characterize that notion of a continuum. Makes total sense to me, and it's a much better way of explaining it. Probably for the reason that you're an MIT graduate. You know, I just went to Maryland. You know, so again, it should be expected that I would talk about it in that way. And forgive my humor, but as you know, from our initial conversation, I do have a sense of humor, and I can't control myself at times.
Okay.
But all right. And there's always a place for humor because again, as you know from our initial conversation, the platform that I speak from is a platform that is about the people in industry, in the construction mm-hmm. industry specifically for me, but just in general. And I talk about soft skills, which you also referred to as professional skills in that interview that I visited. I refer to soft skills as not really being skills, but more being the qualities, the attributes, the traits of a manifestation of an individual's personal values and how they go about first understanding them and then sharing them through relationship building as they go through a career path from whatever place they start to the end is by becoming effective communicators, learning how to communicate in better ways, in different ways. To ensure that there's the understanding about themselves being conveyed, you know, what those qualities are. Sometimes you have to say, well, one of the things you may notice about me is this, and it might have something to do with, again, how they approach a particular situation or how they react to certain things. But communication is absolutely essential at every phase of development from entry level all the way through retirement. So I talk about the soft skills stuff. Your thoughts are very much aligned with that because, again, you know, people's qualities are the thing that are important. They matter because those qualities are the basis upon which we make decisions every day about how we go about living our daily lives at whatever stage we are, who we are interested in connecting to and building relationships with. And how we express what is important to us as we deal with the issues that I know you are heavily involved in, and I too am very very closely aligned with the whole notion. You talked in your interview. I mentioned it in my introduction of you. A lot of people talk about DEI, about diversity, equity, inclusion. Occasionally, I hear people kind of starting to nudge it a little bit, like, well, okay, we've talked about it. Well, we need to continue to talk about it. I know you wholeheartedly agree with that. I talk Absolutely. About inclusion and social justice is the way I reflect those two things. They're essentially the same. The whole point is that you know, across every sector in our economy, and certainly in the construction industry, the need for us practicing all the good and reasoned thinking associated with embracing diversity, equity, and inclusion is absolutely vital to the continued ability for the industry to serve its customers. If we don't look to the widest pool of potential candidates for every level of position along that continuum that you mentioned and described so well, we're going to have an incredibly challenging time trying to succeed as a national economy. Your thoughts?
Several. One, to pick up on your last point. Yes, diversity, equity, and inclusion is all about, from a national perspective, accessing the maximum potential labor pool. We are all well aware of the demographic trends in this country, and technical professions have traditionally not drawn from the full extent of the population. But where they have drawn from, demographically is a population that is not growing as fast as other segments. So if we are to maintain the workforce that we had, we're going to have to include more elements of the population. That's simple math. It has nothing to do with I want to feel good or I want to do good. It's about business. The bottom line, we need workers. I think as well, we need to be clear that, you know, people need to make informed choices. You know, it's one thing if I choose not to be part of that continuum because I was exposed to it and I didn't like it. It's another thing if I'm not aware of it. And we have not been as proactive as we need to be in reaching out to all segments of the population to make them aware of the opportunities that exist. And so we're losing by default because, as I just said, we've got a demographic change that's happening. We have other segments of the population that could serve our needs, but they aren't aware of us. And so they are opting out by default instead of opting out by choice. And we have to find ways to provide the maximum exposure so that whatever the percentage is, we get our fair share. So informed choice is a crucial part of what we have to do. There's a third point, but I just forgot it. So let's keep moving on.
That's okay. It'll probably come back up momentarily. One of the things that I say often in form of a question that I put to individuals and groups and audiences that I have the opportunity to speak to is the question, what is one thing that every person in this room, in this audience, in this space has in common with every other person? And I pause for a second because nobody ever gives the answer or blurts it out. And my answer for the purpose of our conversation and for what I talk about often is that we're different from each other. That is something that's a commonality. There's not a single human being that is virtually identical in every regard, every dimension to another human being. It's common sense.
Right.
But unfortunately, and some of it's generational, unfortunately, some folks hold on with both hands to the notion that because you're different than me, that's a problem, or that's a hurdle I don't know if I can get over, or my experience, which is then boils down to my bias, is this or that. Sure. And therein lies why I said there's a need to obviously continue to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, because we ain't there yet.
Right.
And the programs that you are conducting through your organization, other great efforts, there is a greater degree of coordination. One of the ones I think about often is the ACE Mentoring Program, which was founded, I think, probably at least 20 years ago by an architect, a guy named Charles Thornton. And that's a thriving organization today targeting underserved communities at the high school level. Yep. Teaching them about engineering, science, technology, and geared around the construction industry, the building process. So there are many good things that are going on, but you've already made a wealth of great points. But one of the points you made is that we have to give the individuals the opportunity to choose, to make an informed decision, to learn about paths that may be better suited to who they are as human beings who have developed their brain, their consciousness, et cetera, over a number of years. And again, I can remember, and I think I'm a fairly bit older than you. It explains why I stutter sometimes. There was no conversation in my household about, you know, there's a number of things that you can do as you're finishing up high school. Maybe you should take the carpentry class they have at the high school and just see what that's all about and see if you like working with wood. Yeah. Maybe you should do this or do that. None of those conversations were had. The only conversation was, well, okay, when you get out of high school, you're going to go to college. End of conversation. Hmm. And that's my story. That's what I did. Yeah. I ended up in a four-year educational institution. I got a degree in accounting, and I became an accountant. upon graduation. And that was the result of a question I put to my father in my junior year of college, where I said, well, what am I going to do when I graduate? I'm getting an accountant. What am I going to do? He said, you get a job as an accountant. There's plenty of those kind of jobs around. It's not a problem. So that was the end of that. Now, here's where it comes in. It touches, at least in my view, and it's not the most sophisticated view, but it kind of makes some sense. And that is when we think about, you know, what comprises an individual, each individual. Everybody's personalities are different. Their experiences are different from birth all the way through, young adulthood. That's what's formed all the wiring in their brains, which gives them the basis to be able to know if they're exposed to it, if they have the opportunity, that I probably would be better at that than I would be at this. That may be a technical position, maybe a soils technician, which is a certificate program that you can get in different kinds of technical colleges, or maybe I should pursue a path that's going to get me a degree in mechanical engineering because I like putting things together and seeing how they work. But those opportunities aren't necessarily made available as much as they need to be, and they're less available to that portion of the population where there are numbers, and that is right. The underserved communities.
Right. Yes, absolutely true. So two things. One, in terms of the value, the attractiveness of having people with different perspectives and different viewpoints. I mean, we've got the research now falling over itself, just stacks and stacks of research papers about the value to having different perspectives when it comes to solving a problem. And so when we pull in people with different perspectives and different viewpoints, it may be a little tense at first getting used to each other, but the ultimate value to an organization is that having people with different perspectives, different backgrounds, different experiences brings extreme value to the organization. And we know that from any number of examples and any number of research studies that have been done. But that takes me to the point that I forgot earlier. In terms of your earlier statements about the soft skills or professional skills, you know, I'm a mechanical engineer. And so people think of that as a very hard technical discipline. But ultimately, engineering is about serving the public. And to serve the public, you have to understand human motivations. And that is why the teaming, the communications, the other so-called soft or professional skills are important. But it's also why at the collegiate level, we insist that engineers and computer scientists study the humanities, because you cannot serve humans if you don't understand humans. And understanding of humans comes through, at some level, at a very strong level, the humanities. And so that's why that's part of the engineering and computing curricula. So the value of difference. And let me give you one of my tired examples, because I abuse it horribly. The analog that I draw is to genetic diversity. A population that is genetically diverse, and humans aren't by and large genetically diverse, but say in the animal kingdom, populations that are genetically diverse are more resilient to changes in the environment. They are able to adapt to changes in the environment and continue to exist. So when we bring together people with different experiences and different skill sets, to me, that's another example of quote unquote genetic diversity strengthening the overall organism, which is wherever people happen to be employed.
So why are we continuing to struggle with the notion of accepting the benefits of diversity, the benefits of trying to reach every part of the workforce eligible pool of potential individuals? Why are we going to continue to struggle with that?
For whatever reason, some elements of the population are trying to convince other elements of the population that we're in a zero-sum game, that if I try to be more inclusive, I am in fact excluding someone. That is not the intent, and frankly, it's not the reality. But, I mean, you know, you get really philosophical about this, and I don't necessarily want to do that here. But there are, when Henry Ford, so I will give a historical example from a technical industry. When Henry Ford set up his production line, the story is, I don't know if it's true, I wasn't there. But the story is that when he set up his production line, he set up a three-part workforce. He had native whites. He had immigrants who at that period were on the border of becoming white, if you look into the history of what whiteness means in this country. Because it wasn't, remember, the signs were no dogs or Irish allowed. So, mm-hmm. You know, there was a time it took before there was acceptance. And then he had an African-American population, a black population. And one of the things that he did is he set those three populations against each other. You got to watch out for these folks over here. You know, they're aiming for your job. And in doing that, he controlled his workforce. He controlled his labor pool, kept his costs down, kept the demands down. Whether or not all that's true, I don't know. I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me plausible. And I definitely believe that some people currently are pursuing a similar strategy. They're trying to keep workers, employees divvied up so that they can control the overall process for whatever aim they hope to gain out of that. And that's frankly why I think we hear so much concern, because there's somebody who's benefiting from this degree of opposition and infighting, when in fact, we would all benefit if with everybody working together. But it's being framed as a zero-sum game. In order for John to gain, Mary has to lose, and vice versa.
Yeah, I agree with your thoughts. The story is interesting. It seems very plausible. It causes me to think about one of the an overall thought about the industry that I have the most experience with, which is construction. And we talk about the construction industry being very, very slow to change, very resistant to change. And one of the areas that they have been resistant to changing in has affected their ability to have an adequate workforce. And that is expressed this way. I'm an apprentice. I'm on the payroll of a union contractor. I get some training at the union hall. Most of the training that I receive is using the model that's been in existence for generations, referred to as OJT, on-job training. Mm-hmm. But I have a problem. My problem is that when I'm trying to learn things, this is the apprentice. If I ask a journey person who has 5, 7, 10, 15, 30 years of experience to help me, their response is, no, I'm not helping you or any other apprentice because you're going to take my job. That thought process is still somewhere in the weeds around dealing with apprentice journeyman movement and the relationship between those two segments of a workforce. And it's not just a union organization, because apprenticeship is not simply a union experience. It's right. Also an open or non-union setting. But that still exists. And the other that still exists, and you mentioned it earlier, and I forget the context. And the other is that there are still a sufficient number of individuals in my generation, baby boomers, and particularly those in a lot of positions of management, senior level responsibility, senior leadership across industries. But again, I speak from the one I have the most knowledge of. And what they are continuing to do is they are continuing to perpetuate the resistance to change. They just don't want to do it any different, to use blunt terminology. Even if it's just talking about something in terms of a simple use of different methods or materials in the construction process, let alone, you know, recognizing that because these 10 workers that we've hired have as their first language Spanish, it's just not going to work, folks, because they don't speak English. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm saying in a very direct way, and with respect to all. But you know, we also know that Hispanics represent roughly 30% of the construction industry workforce, and they are by reputation and probably begrudgingly are described, even with the language issue, as some of the hardest workers any contractor has. Yeah. So then we go back to, you know, it's the Henry Ford thing. It's kind of like another version of that same thing. Your thoughts?
I agree with that. Again, I come at this as an engineer. One of the things, the adjustments that has to be made as the country moves forward, or as professions move forward, is we have to think about what is essential and what is not. What has to be maintained and what do we have to be willing to let go of? The folks who are locked into, this is the way we've always done it, this is the way I'm comfortable, it doesn't work anymore. You're a dinosaur. You know, it's adapt or die.
Yeah.
You know, that's the choice, adapt or die. And there's no reason to die, because adaptation, while it may be challenging, is not impossible. And the benefits are significant. We have ways, and we can find additional ways to accommodate, incorporate, evolve, and move forward. And that's what we have to do. You know, if somebody is speaking Spanish on the job, to take that one example, unless they're unable to understand when direction is given, does it really matter? Is it impeding your ability to do your job? Probably not. It just grates on you because you don't know what they're saying, and your ego is such that somehow you think they're talking about you when nobody has time to talk about you. Nobody's thinking about you. So just do your job and move forward.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and again, the other term that describes that behavior is bias.
Yes.
Bias is rampant. Implicit bias is it dominates, and it makes it very, very difficult for people of goodwill to try to provide an atmosphere where change, where evolving, where recognizing the differences are not impediments. There simply are aspects that describe one person versus another. This conversation needs to continue. And your organization serves an important role in concert with the work of other organizations as well. As we are in this conversation, and you're looking forward, you've been in your position for roughly a year. You have some incredible stops along the way in your journey. It's impressive, and I mean that. I mean that as a compliment. You've done a tremendous number of things, and all progressive, but all focused around some of the same themes. Yes. And some of the same beliefs that you operate with. What's the kind of a hopefully uplifting thought? As you sit in your position and you look at what's going on with the STEM, let's call it the STEM movement,
sure,
because I think it is a movement of sorts. What causes you to feel optimistic about some of the things that we've been talking about and the future of STEM, but also how that kind of cascades into every aspect of the economy, society, yep, et cetera?
We live in an increasingly technological society. You know, technology is all around us. It pervades what we do. A lot of it has gotten to the place where it's invisible. We don't think about it, but it's there. What gives me hope and what I find encouraging is when I talk to young people, and as you said, Great Minds in STEM has been around for 35 years. We inspire STEM excellence in pre-college populations. We support it through scholarships, fellowships, and social support in college populations. And we recognize STEM excellence among professionals and across that continuum, but especially with the young people. I see enthusiasm, I see creativity, I see a desire to contribute to making the world a better place in great ways and in small ways. And so that's what gives me hope for the future, not only for this country, but for the planet. We have some incredible young people out there who are really prepared to make fantastic contributions wherever they're able to do so.
Yeah, well said, and I wholeheartedly agree. As I get into the final chapter of my working life, I have the same sentiment about youth. And the ones that I come in contact with, I'm incredibly impressed with. It's a connection to generations, but what I see is there seems to be among the ones that stand out that they're more activist. Mm-hmm. They're more about giving some of their time for purposes that don't generate a paycheck, may not advance their interest, but just serve others.
Yep.
You know, a closing thought, it would be a quote from a gentleman who is my mentor, has written a number of books on leadership. And in his first published book, which is roughly 22 years ago, but it's still as fresh and valuable and evergreen today in terms of how it talks about leaders, what makes leaders great. He says the person needs to do what they love in the service of people who love what they do. And I see that in spades in terms of just how you talk about what your mission vision is all about. Your views are fair, balanced, and forward-looking. I see my dear friend who is associated with Deb Martinez, who I don't mind mentioning. So somebody will hear this name maybe when they play this recording 5 years from now. Deb Martinez. I knew a Deb Martinez.
Yeah.
She's an interesting personality and a wonderful person.
So
I'm hopeful. And I'm hopeful because there are great leaders like you that are continuing the conversation, pressing forward, and simply not giving up because we can't. Giving up is not an option. Your final thoughts?
Oh, thank you, Dennis, for this opportunity, and thank you for the kind words about myself and about Great Minds in STEM and what we're trying to do. I guess as a final thought, I want to again emphasize that continuum along from earliest technician, technologist, engineer. There is so much that we need in the country and in the world, opportunities that are available for people along that continuum, and it's just crucial that we make sure that we reach out and make people aware of the opportunities that are available. And once we have them aware, that we facilitate, not just encourage, but we facilitate their taking advantage of those opportunities, because that's what serves us all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Norman, the time has been too short. We both can talk. My Irish came through because, you know, I'm a blabbermouth, but I was enthusiastic and interested about having this conversation with you. And I hope that this time that we spent together will have useful purpose going forward for your interests and your organization. And I'm sure that people, young people in particular, that hear us talk about STEM and all the other things we've discussed today, hopefully they'll be encouraged that there are a couple of older generation individuals, among many, that have their back, so to speak.
Yes.
So thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
All right, thank you, and I look forward to it as well.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft as Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.